From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A group of American activists representing a number of progressive organizations have been staying in the Venezuelan embassy in Washington, D.C. in order to protect it from occupation by the U.S. government. One of the organizers of the effort is attorney and activist Kevin Zeese. Among other things, he maintains the website popularresistance.org, and we spoke with him via telephone from the Venezuelan embassy in Washington on Friday.
This collective began on April 10th. You know, I've been here at least 2 weeks, but now I'm staying for the duration, as is Margaret Flowers, the co-director of Popular Resistance, with me. And we have a good group of people here, a nice mix of groups, Veterans for Peace, World Beyond War, Green Party people, Code Pink, Black Alliance for Peace. It's a real good mix of people who are here. It's a very broad coalition.
Yep.
And they are resolute. They feel they will not give this embassy up.
You've got the question, first of all, of embassy property. Who is the government of Venezuela? That's what's been raised by the United States by saying it's not the guy that won the election last year. And I know you were one of the observers that actually saw the election last year, but rather this other guy. And he has some legal basis, they claim, in the Venezuelan Constitution, sort of like Pelosi being declared president all of a sudden. And
right.
Then there's the question of sovereignty, the inviolability of the space of embassies and all of that. And so I guess we'll start first with how is it that the U.S. is deciding that Guaido is the president of Venezuela as opposed to Maduro, and maybe you could start with the election last year.
There was election last May. President Maduro was reelected. He had higher percentage of registered voters than either President Trump or President Obama got. 9 million people voted. He got 6 million votes in rough numbers. And it was a multiple party election. There are six candidates. Next highest candidate was an opposition candidate. We got 25%. And so it was a legitimate election. There were more than 150 election observers. On popularresistance.org, we have a slider at the top of the page about this collective and about this action. It includes links to a letter sent by international election observers to the EU telling the EU they were putting out false information about the election, that in fact it was unanimously agreed by the election observers that the Venezuelan election met all international standards for democratic elections, that it was, there was no fraud, and it was legitimate, and Maduro won the election. And so Guaido, on the other hand, didn't run for president. He ran from the second smallest state in Venezuela. He came in second place with 24% of the vote. That was enough to get him in the national legislature, but he didn't get in by very much. So even in his own local state, he's not all that popular. He was unknown outside of his local state. He was an unknown. It's not Pelosi.
Right.
This is much more of a low-level backbencher, extremist right-winger, you know, even lower than Marco Rubio. I mean, really, this is a nobody person selected out of the legislature. And it violated the Venezuelan Constitution in three ways. First, under the Venezuelan Constitution, there can be an interim president from the National Assembly after the election and before the inauguration. Once there's an inauguration, there are different rules that apply. Guaido self-appointed after the inauguration. That's the first violation. Mm. The second violation is under the Constitution. You can see the Constitution. We, in fact, the declaration I mentioned that's on Popular Resistance in the slider, we link to the Constitution so you can read it yourself. Under the Constitution, the second thing is that there are a half dozen ways in which the president cannot serve, i.e. the president dies, the president's incapacitated, the Supreme Court removes him from office. None of those were met. So there's no need for an interim president. If it had been done before the inauguration, there was none of the standards were met to put in place an interim president because there's President Maduro was still serving and is still serving. The third violation of the Constitution is that under the Constitution, after the interim president is put in place, 30 days later, there needs to be an election to put in place a permanent president. It's now been more than 60 days, and there's no election scheduled. There was an amusing video of Elliot Abrams being asked about this, and he was just caught in lie after lie, had to finally admit that, in fact, Maduro is still in power. That's why those 30 days have not begun. So even Elliot Abrams admits Maduro is still in power. And so that who is in control of this embassy, this building that we're in, is the Venezuelan embassy. There is a deed for for Venezuela owning this embassy. And the Venezuelan government is led by, as I said, Nicolas Maduro after a legitimate election. What is happening with the puppet Guaido is a U.S. coup. Guaido was selected by the United States. There was a series of meetings in the OAS in January, and a couple meetings in January and February, where they decided on Guaido. And Guaido, the night before he self-nominated, Michael Pence called and said, "We support you." An hour after he self-appointed, Trump said, "I recognize you." And Trump got, the U.S. got other right-wing governments in Latin America and the allies that are under U.S. thumb in Western Europe to also recognize him. But everybody who recognized Guaido, every country knows that Guaido was not legitimately put in place. They know Maduro was legitimately elected. They all know this is a charade. And that's what's made this so difficult for the U.S. government to remove us. They know that if they come in here, they are violating the Vienna Convention, which requires host governments, in this case the U.S., to protect embassies, in this case Venezuela. Host governments are required to protect embassies in their country. They are inviolate. That means they cannot be violated. If the U.S. comes in here, they are entering unlawfully. They are trespassing. They are violating the Vienna Convention. And I think people in the State Department realize that if that is allowed, it has unpredictable implications around the world for U.S. embassies. And it will send a message to governments around the world that your embassy in the United States is not protected by the Vienna Convention, that the U.S. is lawless when it comes to following international law as it applies to protection of embassies.
So that takes us now to the other question, which is, all right, there's no question that the embassy property is beyond the reach of the United States. That certainly should not be a question. Is it allowed, because I guess we just saw this happen in London, for the sending state, that would be the Venezuelan government, to authorize the local police, for example, to remove people from its embassy property? In other words, if yes, there were a government, so if it could be determined that Guaido is the government of Venezuela and he asked Washington's police to vacate the premises there, that would be recognized as a valid act, assuming he had the authority to do so, ab initio.
Let me explain. In fact, we had a opposition person break into the embassy. I can't remember the day. I think it was 3 days ago. And get up to the third floor and lock himself in a room, shouting out to the front that he had taken over the embassy or he was in the embassy.
Right.
We talked to the police about this, and we had to get permission from the Venezuelan government to give a limited waiver of inviolability. So two police officers could come in and remove him. The police negotiated with him. He said he would leave if the police came. From the embassy staff, we went to the foreign minister, and the foreign minister sent word down through the liaison between Venezuela and the State Department that they have a limited waiver of inviolability. Mm. The police came in, the person was removed, and that ended. On the other hand, we're in the position of being guests, in fact, tenants,
right,
of the Venezuelan embassy. The Venezuelan government has said over and over in multiple ways, in writing and in video, that we are guests of the embassy and we have the full protection of the Venezuelan government here. We did not unlawfully enter. They gave us a key, multiple keys. We are not trespassing. We are here with their permission. Yeah. So the unusual thing would be if the U.S. came in, they would be the unlawful entry. They would be the trespass. They would be violating the law. We would not be. We are breaking no laws being tenants in this embassy. If they charge us with a trespass or unlawful entry, those will be false arrests, unlawful arrests that we will prosecute. The decision makers and the police who carry out those orders will be held accountable for any unlawful eviction or unlawful arrest. And I say unlawful eviction because that's another layer. Under D.C. law, tenants have rights, and there's an eviction process.
Right.
They can't just come in and evict somebody. They have to go to court, and there's a process for eviction to proceed. Even if you have a landlord that owns a building, sells the building to somebody else, the tenants have rights. Those tenants with the new landlord cannot be evicted without going through an eviction process. So in addition to international law, we also have local law on our side. And any action by the U.S. government to violate these laws will send a message to the world that the U.S. will break laws and violate U.S. embassies, and embassies are not safe. So what will this mean to a U.S. embassy around the world? Will they be safe?
Right.
The U.S. is setting a standard now that puts U.S. embassies at risk.
I mean, I remember the situation in Iran after the revolution. The greatest offense that could be committed in, you know, by humankind was to violate the embassy in Tehran. That was the way
they
were holding it out back then. It was a reason to go to war that they were
beating
their chest even to today based on that. As far as the law,
just comment on that because that's a really important point you just made.
Yeah.
What we are trying to do here is prevent a war.
Yep.
There's an empty U.S. embassy in Caracas. There's an embassy of Venezuela in D.C. The U.S. wants to have a country serve as a protectorate. They're trying to get Switzerland to serve as a protectorate in Caracas. Venezuela is negotiating with countries to serve as a protectorate of this embassy in D.C. What we hope happens is that the two countries will negotiate a mutual agreement on allowing countries to be protectorates of those embassies.
Yeah.
And that would be a way to avert that. What we fear is the U.S. takes this embassy illegally, and then Caracas has to decide what to do. If Caracas decides to do the same in Venezuela, U.S. will say act of war,
right,
and that could lead to a real war. So we are trying to prevent a war and start a diplomatic process. Our hope is a diplomatic process works for these embassies, and then that begins a diplomatic process to wind down these illegal coercive measures that we call sanctions, these economic sanctions that are causing tremendous problems in Venezuela. We want to see that ending as well. We want to see an end to the sanctions. We want to see an end to the threat of the war and an end to the threat to each other's embassies.
Okay, so then you have had this sort of, acknowledgement of the authority of the Venezuelan government over that property by the acts that the police have taken, and I assume that you mentioned that they were working hand in hand with state. I assume that's some sort of an acknowledgement.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
that's
I understand. You can't stop the government, but you know this kind of an acknowledgement seems to contradict their recognition of Guaido. The power to recognition power, according to the State Department, is in the president under Article 2 of the Constitution and other foreign affairs powers elsewhere in the Constitution, that the Congress has nothing to say, basically, about who's recognized as a legitimate government, that this is the president's prerogative. It's an interesting contradiction that this particular president has the power to decide what's a legitimate government and what's not, given, you know, his own polling data on that question as president of the United States, and also given the mechanism, by the way, through which he became president of the United States, as opposed to the mechanism through which President Maduro became president of Venezuela. But be that as it may, this is sort of speaking with forked tongue from the White House. On the one hand, Guaido is the president. On the other hand, Maduro's government is the government.
That's right. And it's so interesting that Carlos Vecchio, the fake ambassador who the U.S. wants to put in this building, came to the embassy on May 1st, on May Day. Mm. I assume he hoped to be triumphant and enter the embassy then. Instead, he was unable to even communicate to the audience. We had people outside protesting, people inside protesting. He actually had to flee the embassy in disgrace, much like Guaido fled
right
when his coup failed the day before. And so even though you're right about that, the U.S. Police, the Secret Service and State Department police required us to get permission from the Venezuelan embassy personnel, the foreign ministry, to enter to remove that intruder. They are now claiming that it's Guaido's government that decides who can come in and who can go out. So they are speaking with forked tongue, and everybody knows that they're lying about Guaido. Everyone knows that's a total figment. It's a fake charade, fraud. Every country, including those that recognize Guaido, knows that's a fake. So that will be the historical reality. And if the U.S. violates the Vienna Convention, everyone will know the U.S. Charade has gone to new lengths, and that will just make things worse for the United States. This is part, by the way, of the end of U.S. empire. This, in 5 years, 10 years, we will look back at this as one of the moments when U.S. empire faded. This is, the U.S. has forced its so-called allies, in other words, countries that are controlled by the United States economically and militarily, force their allies to recognize Guaido. The OAS changed its rules because they could not get the two-thirds required vote to recognize Guaido. So they changed it to majority and barely got that. People who voted for that were embarrassed. You could see it in their faces. They were forced to vote for Guaido. So this incident and this embassy moment is going to go down in history as part of the end of U.S. empire.
It's interesting that you mention it, because, in fact, the reason Venezuela is a target and has been a target since 1998 is the role that it's played in changing the power relations in the Western Hemisphere, which is the foundation
That's right.
of American global power.
Yep.
You know, not so long ago, we had leftist governments in Argentina, Brazil, Venezuela, Bolivia, Uruguay, Honduras, you know, across the region, and then some at least moderately democratic governments in Chile and some other places. And
That's
there
right.
have been a variety of coups d'etat and other means, either skirting the perimeters of the constitutions or just outright violations, where you have end up with elections like the one that was just held in Brazil, where the most popular politician is not allowed to run because they threw him in jail. If that were, for example, Capriles or one of the other characters, Lopez, in Venezuela or the United States, would have the Navy parked off the shore already. How is it that...
Well,
I just wanted to say, I mean, how is it that the U.S.'s attempt to dismantle that which was built in the wake of Hugo Chavez across the region has come to this moment, really, where they're trying to get Venezuela out of the business of helping other nations in the hemisphere protect their own sovereignty?
Well, Hugo Chavez was not only an advocate for independence of Venezuela, but he was a Bolivarian. Simon Bolivar was the great liberator who tried to unite Latin American countries in liberation against colonizers. And when Chavez took power and price for oil was high and Venezuela had lots of money, they used that money to support governments that were seeking to declare their independence from U.S. domination. President Obama who is perhaps one of the greatest empire presidents the U.S. has ever had, took the failure of the Bush administration in Latin America, where this tide of independence developed, and began to turn it around, and that's continued under President Trump. But the truth is that in all these countries where the U.S. has successfully conducted coups and regime change operations, the people are still in unrest. Mm-hmm. There's tremendous protests in Colombia and Honduras and Chile and Argentina, the mass exodus from the Central American countries. There's still a tremendous fervor for independence from U.S. rule. And so this embassy issue is going to have reverberations in Latin America. It already is.
Right.
These Latin American countries and these popular movements in particular in Latin America that want independence from the United States see the abusiveness of the U.S. and how they're handling this embassy. And if they were to come in and arrest U.S. Citizens and unlawfully arrest us and unlawfully evict us and violate the Vienna Convention, this will increase the fervor in popular movements across Latin America for independence. So that's why I said earlier in that last answer that this will go down in history as part of the demise of the U.S. empire. The U.S. is now in a lose-lose situation with this embassy. First, they can lose by letting us stay. Second, they can lose by unlawfully evicting us. The U.S. needs this embassy. This is critical. Yeah. Because they have lost the coup in Venezuela.
Right.
More than, I think, at least three times, Guaido has tried the coup and failed every time. The U.S. needs to turn this embassy into a government in exile and convince the pressure other countries in Latin America and in Europe that are under U.S. domination to do the same. So there can be a network of Venezuelan embassies turned into this fake government. They cannot succeed in Venezuela, so they have to succeed outside of Venezuela to create momentum for a fake government that is really not recognized by any country. The UN does not recognize it. 150 countries don't recognize it. And those that do recognize it only do so under U.S. pressure. So this embassy has become critical. If we succeed here, then it's another defeat for the U.S. coup.
There's another irony involved here. I saw after the 2015 election in Argentina, for example, that shortly after Macri became president, and everyone assumed, and rightfully so, I think, that he was going to be, you know, the restorative U.S. puppet in Argentina. One of the first places that he had to go and genuflect was Beijing, as acknowledgement of the reality of things, which is that if he's going to remain in office and offer, you know, the usual neoliberal austerity to the people there, that there had to be some measure of something in it besides the looting that accompanies that. And that kind of stuff comes in the win-win program of Beijing. China has an interesting history with the United States on the question of recognition, perhaps the textbook case, if you'll recall.
Yeah.
So to me, I see the irony of that kind of at the center, because China, of course, before this re-entrenchment of the U.S. government, had in the works across continental, you know, intercontinental railroad in South America, the canal in Nicaragua, deep water ports up and down Latin America, et cetera, et cetera. And now some of that is kind of, you know, on hold, watching things play out.
Well, I think China is a very, and so is Russia, both are very critical players in this. And I think I don't think China's on hold as much as it's continuing to proceed on those goals with, you know, caution, but with the realities of the current politics. Both China and Russia have filled the void where the U.S. has put in place economic restrictions, the economic war. They have been loaning money. They have been sending advisors to work on the oil industry. Russia has even sent military advisors. If the U.S. were foolish enough, and I really think it would be so dangerous because it would be a decade or more of chaos in the region and mass destruction if the U.S. were to militarily come into Venezuela. I mean, the Colombian government and Brazilian government have both said no to that. The Western European government has said no to that. NATO now, is unfortunately, is in Colombia, and they're trying to entice Brazil. So that's a danger. But Venezuela is ready. They have a military of 200,000. They have an armed National Guard and police force. And they have armed a massive civilian militia right. of 2 million people and growing,
right.
armed and trained and wanting to support the Venezuelan government if the U.S. or Colombia or Brazil were to enter militarily. In addition to that, Venezuela has air defense missiles against missiles. That's very sophisticated, so the U.S. will not have the air dominance that it had in Syria or in Libya or in Iraq. Venezuela is 6 times the size of Iraq, has 30 million people, and people who are very strongly educated on independence and sovereignty and U.S. imperialism. And so if the U.S. were to try a military approach, it would be terrible for Venezuela, but it would be end up being a defeat for Venezuela. And now that's, in addition to Venezuela's power, is the geopolitical reality of China and Russia partially owning part of the Venezuelan oil industry. So an attack on the oil industry and the theft of that oil is a theft from not only Venezuela, but from China and Russia. And it's not just the oil. Venezuela is number one in oil reserves, but also number one in diamonds and gold. Number 5 in gas. Yep. It has mass reserves of minerals needed for electronics, minerals needed for weapons. It has mass amount large fresh water sources that are becoming more and more important in the globe. So Venezuela has a tremendous wealth. So it's not just fighting against the independence of a country that declared itself sovereign from U.S. domination, which is a bad enough example, and we can see what the U.S. does to Iran and other countries that have done that. But it's also the reality that Venezuela has immense wealth of riches that the U.S. wants to dominate and will share with these other countries that they're pushing to recognize in the fake government of Guaido.
Yeah, and on that point, if you take a look at the dockets of the federal courts in the United States and some of the courts in the European Union, some of those resources are already the source of judgments in the trial court level in the billions, particularly, for example, gold.
That's right.
Gold mining in favor of a Canadian mining company, Citgo and its assets, etc. Venezuela has been vigorously defending and prosecuting cases against them in the courts, but Juan Guaido could stroll into federal court tomorrow with a certificate of recognition from the United States and stipulate to settling out those cases in favor of anyone he'd like. Isn't that true?
And that's why this embassy is so important. You yep. put in place a government, a fake government in this embassy and put it in other embassies around the world.
Yep.
The money from Citgo and other thefts the United States making from Venezuela will be used to fund that fake government.
That's right.
In fact, one thing that's not been reported in the U.S. media but widely reported in Latin American media is that Juan Guaido's chief of staff and bodyguard and his bodyguard were arrested, and they searched their homes and computers and phones and found evidence that the U.S. is going to use $1 billion in Venezuela's assets, putting it through the Bank of America in Colombia to pay for mercenaries from Central American countries to create 8 to 10 terrorist cells trained in Colombia. They were going to wear Venezuelan military uniforms to make it look like it was a military uprising and do terrorism in Venezuela, funded by U.S. dollars stolen from Venezuela. And they were going to attack the electric grid again. They were going to attack the subway, the metro, the cable that goes from downtown Caracas up to the mountains. They were going to attack the government buildings. They were going to try to assassinate government leaders, including Maduro. And this is all proven in documents that were seized from Guaido's chief of staff. So,
another
and that's not been reported in the United States, but right. it's been reported widely in Latin America.
Another Contra war with Abrams and Bolton at the helm.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, Kevin, thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
I'd urge people to visit Popular Resistance. Go to the slider on top. We have the story about this collective. Read the declaration of the Embassy Protection Collective and sign on to the declaration.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.